You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is my interview with the writer and director for The Summit of the Gods, Patrick Imbert.
Merci. Grimpez. Plus haut. Et après.
Bonjour, Abou. Je suis journaliste, je travaille pour un magazine japonais. Tout ce que je veux, c'est couvrir l'ascension. L'Everest, la face sud-ouest.
Tu connais les règles d'une solitaire. Pas de communication, pas d'intervention.
Pour quelle raison aller toujours plus haut? Être le premier.
Une fois qu'on y a goûté, et on ne peut plus s'en passer. Il n'y a plus que ça qui compte. Je cherche un sens à leur vie. Grimper, c'est la seule manière que j'ai de me sentir vivant.
Pour certains, la montagne n'est pas un but, mais un chemin. Une fois là-haut, il n'y a plus qu'à continuer.
All right. So, everyone, I am being joined right now by the writer and director of the new animated film, The Summit of the Gods, Patrick Imbert. Patrick, how are you doing today?
I'm okay, Matt. It's cool.
Good. So, your film premieres at the Cannes Film Festival, and it gets acquired by Netflix. It's going to be seen by millions of people on their platform. Can you talk about the journey that has led you to this moment in terms of what you originally intended for it as far as it being seen and the way it's being distributed right now?
Well, first, distribution is another side of the work that I am not really closed to, and it happens late in the production. But when I start the movies, I already thought about the audience and what I would like the audience would see and would feel as emotions. And I tried to build the story and to keep what I thought it was universal in the story. I mean, more than climbing a mountain and more than do competition or whatever. And in my point of view, it would be more universal to talk about why we do the things we do. And this is applied to the climbing world. But I hope it will talk to everybody, not only the mountain passionate people or not only the one who like animation movies. I hope it will be a larger audience.
Yeah, no, totally. I think so, too. This is based on a popular manga series that has already been widely beloved by a lot of people over the years. And you're adapting this Japanese story in French. And so I'm curious to know as well, do you see this very much as a universal global experience for people as the story goes?
Definitely. I say well it depends of what you do with the material. You can do many different movies with based on this manga. But what I try to do, this it's what I said, I try to make it more the more universal as possible, not only Japanese, not only French. And by the way, it is French because we are French and we work in French. This is the work language, but that's all. It is supposed to be dubbed for every audience language. So I hope it will be more than Japanese or French or whatever.
Yeah, no, totally. I think that when we were watching the movie last night, the themes of searching for greater purpose beyond what life presents to you is something that anybody in any language can relate to. And that's something I also wanted to ask you is you have a character who was searching for another character going on this journalist assignment or mission, if you will. But then you have the other character of Habu, who is in search for something greater than what life is already presenting to him. Just curious to know what level of insights you were able to uncover into the minds of mountain climbers who push themselves towards the brink of death on a daily basis?
Well, I did not know anything about mountain climbing first. Wow. So I had to learn a lot, to read, to see many movies or whatever about this. And it appears that I think I could understand maybe the biggest part of their psychology. I mean, what pushed them to do this? Let me do a parallel with the creative way to do. As I draw, I'm a kind of artist, so I draw because I like to do this, mm-hmm. and nobody asks me to do so, and I do it because that's my life. And I felt it was the same for these guys. And later, after the movie was done, I talked with many people in the mountain climbing world that say, well, it's quite a good comparison. it works. So this parallel helps me to understand these guys. There is a limit to this parallel because when we draw, when we animate, it's not risky at all. It doesn't risk to die. Or maybe we risk to have a thumb tendonitis, but that's all. But still, I think it is helpful to understand them.
There was a live-action film adaptation of the story released in 2016. Was the decision to do it in animation an attempt to... Obviously, you're an animator yourself, so that part I understand. But was it also an opportunity to be different than the live action, or would you have done an animation no matter what, regardless?
It definitely have to be different from live mm-hmm. action because it is 2D, because it is animation, and you know, it's a tough job to do animation. Mm-hmm. So the main question, and I am often asked this, it's why doing this in animation? And the only reason is, if you make it in animation, you have to use the animation for what it is. And you must not do exactly the same that you will do in a live action movie. And my way to put the camera is most of times is quite sober and will be it could be done in live action, but sure. Sometimes I choose to go away from the camera reality, and this you cannot do this in live action movie. And if it's well balanced, if you choose the right moment, then I think it can bring some more stuff. Ça apporte quelque chose, quoi.
Yeah, it brings something completely different and you know a little more basically.
Yeah. I like the sober kind of direction. Mm-hmm. So I throw away many ideas of what I call animation trickery. Mm-hmm. Because as I work in animation, and we all of my team, we like to make the things moving, or we like to do animation trickery. Right. But I'm not animator anymore. Here I am director. I have to think about the entire movie. Most of times, I decide to throw away this trickery and to keep it only for the moment I thought it was really helpful and it was serving the le propos.
The story.
The story. Mm-hmm.
I completely agree, because the Less is More approach of this made those moments stand out to me pretty greatly. I think a lot about towards the end of the film when they're climbing the south side sure. of the wall, and he starts to have the headaches at the high altitude, and it starts messing with his perception of the environment. Mm-hmm. A large reason that scene is also so super effectful is the soundscape that you build in this movie. It's really incredible, and I think it's very underrated how much work goes into animation sound design, because everything has to be created from scratch. There is no...
Yeah.
capturing anything on set, because you're not shooting on a set. So can you exactly. talk a bit about creating like this
yes.
really fantastic environment?
The movie is thug at the very beginning with this idea of sound. Mm-hmm. Because at the time the characters start to climb, they do efforts and they don't talk anymore.
Right.
So this is the time where you can let the mountain speak and express, you see? So and you do it with sound design and music. So with all the sound, it is part of the subject that to show the snow, the wind, the steps in the snow, the glacier, the glacier cracking, and all of this. For me, it is part of the narrative. For example, I use many times the crackings before there is an avalanche. So in order that the audience know that, okay, cracking means maybe there is danger. So I built this little by little, aussi bien par l'image que par le son.
As much through the image than through the sound.
And then regarding the sound design in itself, the team was really happy to work on this movie because they don't have that much the occasion to work on this kind of action scenes or nature scenes. So they really put a lot of themselves, they were really involved to create all these sounds. Concrètement, comment on dit?
Concretely.
Concretely, it is made mostly with banks, sound banks. But there is not only one sound that you can put, let's say, a wind sound or crack sound. It's not working this way. Right. They have to add many, many, many sound layers to create one. And sometimes the basic sound is something totally different. But it creates the illusion of the right sound. This is amazing. And there is also a very creative part during the mix step that allows you to create the space. Once you have the sound in itself, you can place it maybe far or close to the character, or you can put some basses or whatever you want. And this also goes with the narrative goal.
Hi, I'm Christina Yerling-Biro, host of the podcast Pop Culture Confidential. Join me as I go way behind the scenes with some of the most influential people in entertainment and media. Hear actors such as Succession's Brian Cox talk about his favorite characters to play.
There always has to be a mystery. The audience have to be in a situation where they want to know what's going on.
Meet studio execs like Pixar chief Pete Docter and learn his secret on how he makes us cry.
Emotion is our first language.
And so many others who are defining popular culture, from Obama speechwriter David Litt to Top Chef host Padma Lakshmi.
We don't often think about food politically, or we don't want to, but it really is.
Join me. Search for Pop Culture Confidential wherever you get your podcasts.
Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown-Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown-Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, GenXGrownUp.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, you think that was good enough?
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right.
I've never done it.
Right.
And another obviously key component to that in capturing the majestic, awe-inspiring quality of the landscape and what these people are accomplishing is the score. And the music here by Amin Bukhafa is really fantastic in this. Can you talk a little bit about the direction that you wanted the score to go into and what emotions you wanted to draw out of the viewer?
Yeah, I always thought that the music in this movie should be on two legs. One is the Hollywood kind music that goes with the emotion. If it's sad, the music have to feel sad or whatever. But the other leg is giving donner une personnalité à la montagne.
Yeah, it's to give a personality to the mountain because it's a character.
And make us feel that we are in an other world. maybe kind of lunar world. And it's supposed to be a contrast between what is the civilization and what is nature. And for the nature, I wanted something weird or particular, you see. Amin Bouhafa, he didn't show me any melody at first. He worked on kind of toolbox. He creates sounds, different types of sounds, and asked me if I was okay with this or not. And then later, he created the melody. And it was a very important part of the narrative because it helps a lot to define the meaning of the scenes. And most of times I knew what to say to him about the meaning, but sometimes it appears that I did not know myself what exactly I wanted to show with the scene. And he helps me to clarify this. However, sound, music is not that much in terms of work days, not as much as the image, but the final result, it is both image and music. Music is and sound are really important.
I'm always fascinated by how long it takes animated films to come to fruition. From the first time that you started writing until you locked the film in, what was that time frame?
It is definitely too long. It is, the production in itself takes 2 years and a half, which is almost always the same for all animation movies. And but this, it doesn't include the writing process, which can take many years, but same for animation or live action movies. So it took many years to write this. And also in parallel of this, there is the financial side, le montage financier.
Yeah, there's a I mean, like the editing as well, and financially.
Editing, c'est pas le bon. Editing, c'est le montage.
Oui, oui. Alors tu veux dire.
Oui, mais le montage financier too.
Yes, like well, you have to raise funds and money and finance. Right.
And as animation is expensive, it can be longer. This is, let's call it pre-production time.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned earlier how you watched a lot of video and I'm sure interviewed a lot of people about mountain climbing. Did you yourself attempt to climb at any point?
No, never. It's no. And I think I will never do this. It is definitely too dangerous, too cold. What I do is I just walk and I do kind of trekking, but quiet trekking.
Sure.
That's all.
He goes hiking. He hikes in the mountains in the summer.
Well, that's very lovely, and that must be a lot of fun.
That's enough for me.
Sure, absolutely. I would feel the same way as well. I don't know, and I can't even begin to imagine what the mentality must be for someone to do what these characters do in this. And, you know, that's something that I'm always fascinated by. I also got this feeling when I watched the documentary Free Solo a few years ago. There was a respect and an admiration that I had for the fact that these people were pushing themselves to the limit of what humans can accomplish. At the same time, there is such a danger and a recklessness about it because even when they accomplish their goal, they're trying to upend it somehow and they keep pushing and pushing. Right. So it almost feels like they have almost a death sentence, if you will, in some form or another. And there seems to be almost like a mixture of both cathartic fulfillment and sadness seeped into it. And so I'm just curious to know from your own standpoint in the people that you interviewed and what you've learned about this subject, what is the ultimate takeaway that you've had in understanding this world?
As I did not know that much about this world, I discover little by little. And what you say, what you said, I discover it. I mean, the fact that it's never enough.
Right.
And I thought it was really interesting for the drama.
Yeah.
Because I do a drama, a movie is a drama. So it's definitely, it was for me definitely important to build the drama around this question about going always further, higher, faster, whatever. And this is kind of crazy, but I try to say, okay, this is part of the climbing world, but this is not main important is maybe not this. And this is the path of this Habu path. He first is in this il est dans la mentalité habituelle du grimpeur.
Yeah, he's like in the regular, you know, path mentality of a climber that has to do with competition and
that includes yes, competitions and glory or whatever. Little by little, as he grow up, he understands that all of these are not that important. And at the end, he climbed only for himself.
Yeah.
But this is only my point of view. I don't know if it's really like this in the reality, but I thought it was interesting in the drama.
So we've talked a lot about the work that you put into this, the time it took. And now in talking about the mentality to push oneself beyond where they've gone before and always having this one-upmanship, if you will, do you feel that that's a philosophy you want to apply to your work where you want to try and tackle a bigger project or push yourself mentally, creatively? Like, are you also taking that mentality with you in the work that you produce as a film director?
Yes, that's why I thought I could understand these guys, because I do the things this way. But let me say, it's not a question about higher or better or whatever. Because in the art approach, better doesn't mean really nothing. You have to go further on your own way. This is what I think. See what I mean? Of course, there is a technical side. You always can improve in terms of drawing, in terms of many things. But I want to go further in my way. That doesn't mean better than the other ones or whatever. You see what I mean?
Yeah. It's not about bigger is better. It's more about just your personal fulfillment, your own path.
Exactly.
Totally. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time today to chat with me about this movie. It's a really awe-inspiring and inspirational film in so many ways. And I'm really, really excited for everyone to catch it on Netflix.
Thank you so much.
All righty. Well, you have a great rest of your day. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
Bye-bye. Take care.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to my interview with the writer and director for the animated film The Summit of the Gods here on the Next Best Picture podcast. The Summit of the Gods is currently streaming on Netflix. You have been listening to the Next Best Picture podcast. We are proud to be part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and you can subscribe to us anywhere where you subscribe to podcasts. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support, which you can also lend on over at Patreon. For $1 minimum a month, you will get some exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you so much for listening, as always, and we shall see you all next time.
History is complicated. The story of human progress is long, messy, and riddled with controversies big and small. On Conflicted, we dive headfirst into history's most infamous events and contentious figures. We try and untangle the good from the bad, the fact from the fiction, and the monsters from the misunderstood. Was Genghis Khan a murderous butcher or a civic pioneer? Did the Allied powers go too far in firebombing the German city of Dresden at the twilight of World War II? And how did the Marquis de Sade acquire such a sinister reputation? And was any of it true? These are just a few of the tough questions we wrestle with and investigate on Conflicted. So if you love history or just enjoy a good story, please join me, your host, Zach Cornwell, for a fascinating new topic each and every month. Conflicted, a history podcast, is available on Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you get your podcasts. I hope to see you soon.